It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting today's show. It is end of the year. It's shortly before the end of the year holidays. And so what else would we do but a reporter roundup, us and everybody else in the media business. But inside our community, the federal community, I think we've picked the top news sources to come to Fed Talk, and tell us about the year in review and project where we think federal workforce issues will be headed in 2015 and 2016. We have from GovExec, we have Kelly Looney.
Lunny, that's okay.
I know, I kept saying that, Kelly Lunny. But I'm sure people are saying Looney because that's what it looks like. But Kelly, you've been covering federal workforce issues for GovExec for quite a while.
I have. I have been covering them for the past 7 years. And as much as we like to say things never change, stay the same, and to some degree that is very true, a lot has changed, especially in the last couple of years, particularly since the Tea Party was elected in 2010, and there's been a lot of focus on reducing the deficit, and as a part of that, looking at federal employees' pay and benefits. Yeah. And so that has really kind of come to the forefront in a lot of major debates recently.
Yeah, no, and I believe we had you last year on the Reporters Roundup. You were by phone. It's so nice to have you in the studio.
It's great to be here.
And it's great to have reporters from GovExec. You're very committed to getting, just to getting and reporting accurate news. So thank you for joining us. From our home office, we have Jason Breifel. He is the editor of both of our weekly e-reports, Fed Manager and Fed Agent. Jason, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me this morning, Deborah. Glad to be here.
And Jason is the content editor for both e-reports. They come out weekly. They have slightly different perspectives, which Jason will be talking to us about during the show, in terms of news reporting, ones for the sort of supervisor, manager, executive community, and Fed Agent obviously is directed to the law enforcement, national security arm of the government, which post 9/11 really drove itself up. So we'll be circling back with Jason. And from our host radio station, Federal News Radio, we have Emily Kopp, who she and I have reversed roles. She's normally in the interview seat. I'm normally in the guest seat. Welcome to our show, Emily.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't have to go far, but it's a pleasure to be here.
Right. She walked from her office out into the studio.
My little cubicle.
Right. Yeah. Yes, office. and of course, Federal News Radio, what are you, 12, 15 years old?
It predates me because it started on the internet, and yeah. I've only been here for 3.5 years.
So. Well, I remember when Federal News Radio stood up, and it was at least 12 years ago, but it could be 15, could be as much as 15. And in the last 5-7 years, when I think of the amount of news reporting that occurred by Federal News Radio on their website between then and now, it is phenomenal. Look out GovExec, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just phenomenal. And I've dealt with many reporters, including you, Emily, from Federal News Radio. And what I admire most about the effort inside Federal News Radio is that you're really committed to getting it right, not just, the mainstream media, which is committed to embarrassing federal workers. So Emily, it's great to have you on the show.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and thank you for the kind words. And yes, we certainly try to get things right and accurate, and we like to hear from people either way.
All right. So it is our end of the year roundup. And what I'd like to do is survey the three of you for what you think in your reporting was the top two or three news stories, events, incidents, moments that made the most difference this year and maybe going forward. Kelly, we'll start with you.
Well, what comes to my mind are two issues. One is sort of phased retirement, certainly is one, and that's something that federal employees look at as sort of a micro issue, something that is about themselves and their job and, you know, their personal pay and benefits and job situation. And then the other issue is really the VA story, the agency management, sort of looking at it from that macro level of how agencies are managed and how that affects how people can do their jobs, accountability issues, and the fact that we've got one of the biggest departments in the federal government going through a major restructuring, major reorganization that will change, you know, still remains whether it will change for the better or the worse or not at all perhaps, but it's still an effort that is ongoing and huge and involves a lot of different players. So from my perspective, those were two big issues that I covered and two big issues that people care about and continue to ask about and comment on.
You know, I have to say that being involved in several different ways in the quote unquote VA scandal, it felt like to me that everyone around the federal government was interested and cared. And yet when I would be out and about and talk to particularly executives in other agencies, they actually were not that connected to it. They were maybe so overwhelmed and beat down from the last 2 years. They had paid attention, but it was almost like out of the side of their ear. They weren't deep into it, but as we move through the show, we're going to let them know why maybe they should pay more attention to happening over at the VA. Jason, from Fed Manager and Fed Agent, what for you do you think were the top two or three issues?
Sure. So I'll start with Fed Manager because I think the issues are kind of the same as those that Kelly just laid out. And I think they both phased retirement as a micro issue that does affect employees. But also as a broader management issue about how agencies manage their workforce, do succession planning, things of that nature. I think that's a really big issue. And it ties into the VA situation as well, because as we found in recent months, it turns out that they need 28 to 30,000 new employees over there. But they didn't have the data or information until the past few months to ascertain that. And I'd expect that there's probably a similar situation going on at other agencies where folks may or may not, you know who's in the pipeline, who's moving up, who's getting ready to move out, and getting ready to fill critical roles so agencies can operate at their maximum potential. And that kind of ties into a second big issue that our folks kind of connected with, which are issues of accountability across government agencies. Every IG report or GAO report has become a new opening for a salvo from the general media to look at issues that are going on in agencies. And Congress has also latched on to those issues to go after agencies and in some situations, particular employees, instead of using them as tools to drive management improvement. And then over on the our Fed agent side, I think, you know, the issues with the Secret Service, both the recent report that came out as well as some of the issues that we've been hearing about for the past few years kind of tie in pretty well with both of those issues in terms of management, managing the workforce,
and accountability
for employees.
Yeah.
And so I think those things are going to be really interesting to watch going forward to see how that organization is able to shift and pivot and move forward past some of these.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it was very interesting how you framed some of the issues, particularly the issuance of IG reports, because without me consciously watching, I think what happened in 2014 was Congress started consciously looking at IG reports that came out to see where they could, in my opinion, it was just to exploit and make a news story and embarrass the administration. That was new. That was new, like getting it directly from the issuance of a report. as opposed to maybe a whistleblower coming right into the halls of Congress. So I do think that was a really interesting perspective, because I wonder what that means for 2015 and 2016. Emily, we have your top two or three news stories from the Federal Sure. News Radio perspective.
Sure. So real quick, and I think I'll second or third what's been said. Phased retirement was a really big one with our readers on the website and listeners. That's something that, of course, people are curious about because it's something they could possibly want to do.
Sure.
I do think that the VA scandal was also a really big issue, and I'll just highlight a couple of things we didn't talk about. One is because you did see whistleblowers have a really powerful role to play. And you also saw the Office of Special Counsel, which at times has been very weak. It's empowered now. And so I think that you...
Well, the partnership between Office of Special Counsel and the VA, once it became more than one or two whistleblowers, mm-hmm. and they were able to realize that there were quote-unquote whistleblowers all over the VA who have felt stymied, the partnership of letting OSC into the VA, I think, was dynamic.
Mm-hmm. And I spoke with whistleblowers who said that they have been trying to raise bells, going to the IG, going to their superiors for years. They didn't know about the OSC. And so, yeah, or they thought the OSC wouldn't do anything because the others hadn't. So I think that that's something that would be interesting to look and see what happens. And then another thing that I wanted to mention that we haven't talked about, but I think is interesting, when you look at what's happening with the Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel and the fact that he's going to resign, is this concern about the White House being very insular and wanting to make decisions in a centralized way and not giving departments the authority that perhaps they would have had in the past to make certain decisions on their own mm-hmm. topics.
Yeah, that's another great observation, because I do think if you start looking at discrete news stories from 2014, you start to see that theme pick up. We are going to circle back and start talking in detail about each one of those stories. I think we're going to start with phased retirement. It was something all three of you thought was important to the federal workforce, but we need to take our first break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting today's show. It is the Fed Talk End of the Year Reporter Roundup. We have three top reporters inside the federal community who've joined us today. Who better than Emily Kopp from Federal News Radio? We've switched roles, as I'm going to keep saying. Emily usually interviews me. I get to interview Emily. We have Jason Breifel from Fed Manager and Fed Agent. And we have Kelly Lunny from GovExec. Kelly, you were the first, because I picked on you first, to give the top two or three news stories. But I knew that before we went on the show, there was a consensus that phased retirement right. was what was individually most of interest to individual federal workers. Why don't you start with what is phased retirement? What is it? How's it supposed to work? When did it come into being?
Sure. So phased retirement actually was passed by Congress about 2 years ago. So the law has been on the books. It allows federal employees who are eligible for retirement, and if their agency allows them to partially retire but also remain on the job part-time, so they can draw part of their annuity and also a salary at the same time. The idea behind
it's very modern.
It is. It is very modern.
It's really modern.
And the idea behind it is that they want to, the government agencies want to keep employees who have the institutional knowledge on the job a little bit longer to avert sort of that retirement wave that we've been talking about for a long time, but which is a real concern in some agencies, and allow those employees to continue working and fulfilling the mission, but also mentor other employees so that when they finally do retire, those younger employees will have benefited from their experience, knowledge, and training. And, you know, the law basically requires a certain amount of hours per week that the person who is partially retired and still working has to mentor employees. I believe it's like 20 hours per pay period. So I guess that's 20 hours every 2 weeks. But it's a very popular, as you might imagine, concept among federal workers who are interested in retiring, but maybe don't want to go full retirement right away and still like their jobs.
It's like win-win.
Flexibility.
It's right. A win-win.
And that's,
well, it was intended to be a win-win.
It's intended to be a win-win. Congress, it was bipartisan. Congress was liked it. Federal employees liked it. And in theory, agencies like it. But what we're running into now is that OPM issued the final rules on how to implement it, sort of the framework, in August, which was 2 years after Congress passed the law. So there was a huge lag time between when OPM issued the final rules and OPM said, OK, hey, agencies, you know, we can start accepting applications for partial retirement from eligible people in November. But all the agencies said, hey, we don't, that time frame doesn't make sense for us. We have to come up with our own plans for how to implement it. We have to decide whether we want to implement it. The law and OPM gives agencies very broad discretion on whether they can offer it and how they're going to offer it and who's eligible. So you've got that component, which is stymieing, you know, the works, so to speak, because a lot of agencies have, no agencies have implemented it yet. OPM, Emily mentioned before we got on, has not received any applications or heard anything about employees at their agencies being able to start the process to take advantage of this benefit, because agencies are telling employees, and I've talked to employees at different agencies like Homeland Security, the Defense Department, you know, some of them are getting some vague information from supervisors and HR saying, well, we're looking at it, but we have to decide, but don't think that we're going to be able to offer this anytime soon. I mean, the earliest dates I've heard have been sometime in 2015, but a lot of agencies, like Social Security Administration, for example, hasn't even decided whether or not they will offer it ever. So it's frustrating from the standpoint of a person who may be able to retire soon, and if their agency even offers it and makes a plan, that might not happen until at least 2017.
Well, it's just going to make people who are interested in taking advantage of it hold on longer.
Exactly.
And resent, you know, building up more morale issues and resentment. Jason.
Well, and the interesting thing is, you know, folks did wait for this. A lot of folks, when they saw Congress pass this law, figured, okay, I'll give it a year, you know, maybe two, and we'll wait until this is rolled out so I can take advantage of it. You know, we know that the federal workforce is aging. We know that folks are getting closer and closer to retirement or even staying on past retirement age. But now, you know, now that we're hearing, agencies are still dragging their feet, or some are deciding not to possibly implement this program. I think some folks are just going to just decide to call it quits and walk out the door with the institutional knowledge that the program was designed to help facilitate passing on to the next generation. And just one thing that I'd like to touch on that we hear from especially the management groups, because I know many of them commented on this when the proposed regulations were out, which is related to the optional mentoring component that OPM wrote into the rule. I know that a lot of groups wanted that component to be baked in there really firmly, because that was a key aspect of this program, is to mentor employees who are coming up behind you so they can download some of that institutional knowledge from you. And I know that a lot of groups were disappointed when that flexibility was provided to agencies, because they felt that kind of degraded the program overall. Mm.
Yeah, you know, you just get the feeling over and over again that the government's administration, and I mean over and over again, I mean not just this administration, but even because I get to look back 25 years, that OPM is, OPM is the problem in many personal workforce issues. They're just not swift on their feet. You know, I said to you, Kelly, it's such a modern idea. it's clearly what the federal workforce wants. When you talk to baby boomers, you knew David Walker 10 years ago predicted this wave that didn't occur. And that's because if you know baby boomers in that generation, they had no intention of resigning at 55, retiring. To them, 55 is 45. They feel young. So, and my former law partner, Bill Bransford, we used to joke. He was at the top of the baby boomer generation, and I was the last year of it. And the difference between us was really quite dramatic. But Bill worked to the day he died, but Bill had no intention of retiring in his 60s. He felt, until he was ill, he felt really engaged. He wanted to be engaged. He wanted to be productive. And I think, particularly baby boomers who went into government, I think they all feel that way. So they're starting to really age, as Jason said. They're starting to get into the solid parts of their 60s and above. And if OPM doesn't take advantage of them, you know, what a waste of the law. And I expect Congress will be really upset with them.
I think, just to jump in about OPM, you know, they, to their credit, I think they do try, but their hands are tied in a lot of situations as well. You know, their role is to provide sort of the general framework.
Took them 2 years to issue regs.
It took them 2 years to issue regs. There were some complicated tax issues related to getting that together. They had to have the comment period. 2 years is too long. I agree. But they also don't have a lot of real enforcement authority.
They
on
don't.
A lot of these issues.
Right. And they don't have the enforcement authority. And as a result, when I look at OPM over long periods of time, because they lack the enforcement authority, they lack the spirit, you know?
And the clout.
Well, they lack the spirit. Like, you know, they don't get behind it and push agencies and encourage agencies and really be, you know, the voice of personnel policy and good management because they lack the authority and agencies turn a blind eye. But Emily, I wanted to give you a chance to jump in on the issue.
Well, and I think you've covered it well. I mean, the way that I see it, I think a lot of people are really interested in this because it's something that they possibly could do. And unfortunately, they're not going to. It's just not reasonable to wait another few years for agencies to figure it out. But when you look at the other side of the story, talking about the Office of Personnel Management, it's paid a lot of attention to millennials and mm-hmm. getting people of the youngest generation into government and staying in government. We already know that they leave after about 4 years or so on average. So you are going to have this gap. It's not a question of how long can the older generation stay on, but what if they go and then the younger people don't really want to do it either?
Well, they're not matching it up from both ends,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So I agree in theory. This sounds like a workable plan. It also seems like something that is really individualized. So I understand why agencies are wrestling with it. And anybody who would be offered the chance, I think it's going to also be more complicated perhaps than it seems on the surface, a complicated decision for them to make as well.
The agencies.
I'm talking about the specific employee.
Sure.
If they're deciding whether to do part-time, I think it might be more complicated mm-hmm. than it seems on the surface.
Yeah. You know, I just don't think that it's so that each agency's issues are so unique and different from the others. I think probably across government, the executive branch, there's probably a common set of demographics and issues and needs. But Kelly, before we go to our mid-show break, what's your prediction on where phased retirement, what happens to it in 2015? Does it languish?
Well, I think that's a good question. You know, it depends, again, on what other issues crop up. It could go on the back burner. But if it becomes part of a larger discussion about workforce management, about succession planning, about retirement, about what Emily talked about, sort of bridging the gap between millennials who aren't sticking around and baby boomers who are like, it's time to go, you know, then maybe it gains some more traction and agencies say, hey, look, this could really help us. Let's start thinking about how we're going to implement it. But I think unless it becomes part of a bigger issue and it sort of remains on that individual level in terms of interest, it's going to be hard to get it off the ground, I think.
Yeah. Jason, let me put this idea in predicting where you think it's going for 2015. You know, the last 2 years, because I was critical of OPM for taking 2 years, but let's face it, the last 2 years in the federal government were havoc if you had to run anything because, you know, they were on like 90-day budget cycles. Mm-hmm. They spent more time figuring out how much money they actually had in the bank than doing anything with their money. Mm-hmm. So now that they actually have a budget, but I'm going to use that word like loosely, right? Does that maybe get relieve some of the internal intellectual energy and have it refocused, as Kelly says, on, all right, now we know what money we have. How are we going to get the job done? Do you think that maybe helps?
I hope so. I think having some certainty on the budget front, the fact that folks are not going to spend their holiday break scrambling to prepare five different scenarios for another CR in a month or two, will really be helpful for folks, and hopefully will free up some of that institutional capital, especially at the higher levels of decision makers and agencies. I hope that they're able to kind of focus in on some of these broader management and workforce issues, that especially given the budget situation overall. You know, one issue that we haven't talked about, and most folks haven't been talking about, but that's going to be coming back around next year, is sequestration. Mm-hmm. Sequestration is staring agencies in the face again in 2016, fiscal year 2016. And I'm sure that that the budget folks have that on their mind. It'll be interesting to see how they balance those future needs versus the pressing needs of the present.
Emily, your prediction for 2015, phased retirement?
Oh, I'm wary of making predictions, but I do think that it's I'm not going to hold my breath, let's say, because of a couple of things that we haven't talked about. But one is, when you talk to many people in functions like HR or administration, they say, we're one deep. We've been stretched so thin by these budget, the budget constraints, that we're scrambling, and we're putting resources perhaps on things that the administration says is a priority, and that takes away from things that are not as sexy perhaps, but that we should be doing. And I think that's part of it. And that's, you know, when you look at delays, you also have to question, do they have the resources to do it any faster?
Sure.
And just with regards to the budget, I think that, yes, there is strength in certainty. You might not like it, but you know where things are going, but it's only going to be for 9 months. And that's not a lot of time to get things done.
And Homeland Security only has until February.
That's right. That's right. 188,000 workers. We're going to take our mid-show break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the next issue, which you all raised, was the issue of accountability. It surfaced in different places in the federal community. But we need to take our mid-show commercial break. You are listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote. And be sure to request your special federal savings.
If you're a federal law enforcement officer, then you know to do your job, you tap inside sources. To have a voice on policy and legislation, you join FLIOA. And when you want federal law enforcement officer news and up-to-date federal court decisions, you read FedAgent.com. If you aren't reading FedAgent.com, subscribe today. It's free. Don't let this source pass you by. I'm John Adler, President of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting this morning's show. It is the end of the year for all of us, but at Fed Talk, we're doing what every media source is doing. We're doing the end of the year reporter roundup. Joining us to go through the top issues 2014, make some predictions for 2015, is Emily Kopp from Federal News Radio, Kelly Lunny from GovExec, Jason Breifel from Fed Manager and Fed Agent. At the very beginning of the show, I asked everybody, give me your top two or three issues that you saw being sort of most talked about, most important in 2014 to the federal community, and it was phased retirement hit one of the top. We did phased retirement. The next one's accountability. And Kelly, accountability is a new word.
It's code, my interpretation. It came out of a couple of years of pressure from Congress on the executive branch, and they've churned it into they uncover some wrongdoing, some misdeed in the executive branch, and then there's calls for accountability, which means it only means somebody's got to go. But we all talked about accountability. All three of you said accountability, accountability, accountability. For you at GovExec, when you look back on the year, what does that mean to you? What is that issue? How did it surface? Where do you think it's going?
Well, it surfaced in a lot of different places.
It did.
From being in the public eye standpoint, you had the IRS scandal regarding whether or not certain political groups were targeted for tax exempt status and the fallout from that. You had the VA and the wait time scandals, and a lot of people, were brought into the spotlight for that. And then, now we have the Secret Service, all the security breaches at the White House, the sort of mismanagement that has gone on there. But I think that, like you said, accountability tends to become a hot button issue when something goes wrong and there's a crisis and we want to blame somebody.
It's just a blame game.
And we want a scapegoat. But, accountability does need to be embedded into the government from the top, middle, and the bottom. And I think,
And that to me was the number one criticism of how they handled the VA, how Congress handled the VA, quote unquote, scandal, because it wasn't a scandal. Everyone, when you read the 20 IG reports over the last, Jason knows all this.
Since 1999,
GAO, IG, everyone knew there was a problem with the electronic wait list. Most of the big hospitals had all kinds of problems. Just getting people onto it because of it was a malfunctioning system, but also the dual problem of that technology and provider. So, to claim it was a scandal was just that Congress was able to control, in my opinion, they were able to control the news waves, deflect public attention off of them, and force it down to people who couldn't defend themselves. Because the minute the rubber hit the road, they passed the $16 billion bill that they wouldn't pass for the VA to fund the VA and all those issues. And so I think that's my long way of saying you make an excellent point. In the media, accountability is that they've trained the public. I just want to see somebody fired. But we know when you really uncover those issues that accountability inside the agency is very different. It's not about somebody needs to be fired. It's much more complicated than
It's much more complicated, and it's not something that you can just look at in a soundbite. I mean, it's got to be, like I said, embedded in really every system inside an agency. Whether you're talking about performance management and how to, help an employee, do a better job, or if there is an employee that's accused of misconduct, what does that process look like? But there's also got to be a link between, priorities. How are we going to do this? What are we going to do about an electronic wait system that's not working? Is that, what's the technology solution? What's the resource solution? What's the people solution? It's a multifaceted issue that needs to be talked about all the time versus just, when the Washington Post does a big expose.
Mm-hmm. And if I can jump in here, I do want to say, when we talk about accountability, I think that what we've seen happen, the Veterans Affairs Department, in my mind, in my personal opinion, is a bigger story to try to watch and understand than any of the other ones, like the healthcare.gov not working right at first, or if we think about some of the conference scandals. And the reason why is because, as you said, it wasn't just one instance in time where everything fell apart. These were long, important, critical problems.
Between two branches of government.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about in the VA.
Sure.
Really critical problems that, again, employees were trying to raise concerns about, and the cards fell right this past year. They were finally listened to.
Well, they were listened to because somebody was able to control, the whistleblower was able to get the attention of mass media.
Yeah.
And that was the only way it brought two branches of government down to their knees.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they would have just, in my opinion, they were just good to go along. Congress wasn't funding. The president wasn't making a big stink. Two secretaries who had the VA in the last 8 years, where all these IG reports, I mean, people were trying to blow the whistle, Emily, but there are at least two or three IG reports on the electronic wait list nationwide,
where the IG concluded years ago it was a nationwide system, mm-hmm. a systemic problem. So I think you're right. I think the VA is that what's happening? Like, we just don't know about it? Is it happening in other agencies? That kind of problem?
I think a question we have to ask, and what people at other agencies should be asking, is why did we only do something about this now? Or why did it only get so big? Because you're right. Like, there have been people raising the alarm, and it's not just the weight scandal. I mean, we've heard about a lot of other complaints at the same agency.
It's the lack of providers.
And it's also, I think, that it's just a huge entity that's very decentralized, mm-hmm. And it has been a while, and there's clear that there are management problems, and probably it's related to that. But I think we also have to ask, sort of as a nation, why do we care about this only now? How did it get so bad? Why did we let it get so bad?
Right. I think that's that is an excellent question that sort of transcends all of the issues, sort of, you know, all infrastructure issues that people depend upon for the delivery of some government good or service, right? Mm-hmm. Jason, you know, he and I have talked about this.
Sure. And, you know, I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head, at least from my perspective, Deborah, in terms of how accountability for government employees or government programs has been framed overall we're looking for a quick win to knock someone down, to chop a head off. The public can get their blood and then move on. But that's not letting policymakers, whether in agencies and the executive branch or up on Capitol Hill, actually have the real debates about the underlying issues, like Emily was talking about. And given the current media environment, Twitter driving conversations, things like that, we really focus on kind of the inane sub aspects of these much larger issues, instead of really diving in and figuring out, what do we want our government to do? What mm-hmm. should that agency be doing? How are we funding and staffing it to make sure that they can do their job? Because the way that we currently structure how government operates is completely inverted, which is, we're going to give you a number, that's your budget, figure out how to make all the other things that we've already directed you to do happen.
And don't mess up,
or else we're going to hold you accountable.
Right. And actually, before we went on the show, we were talking about the quote-unquote trend of congressional discussion about making federal workers at will. Because, Jason, along with, you know, the sort of reverse way we think about what does government do, how should it do it, you know, being, I'm going to give you this amount of money, just figure out how to get it done. Now it's, if it doesn't get done, Kelly, it's, you know, I've got a statute and you're going to get fired right now. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make it as hard as possible for you to see if we were right and get your job back. And that, you know, that was the VA statute that everybody was covering. And of course, there's talk now that the House is starting to talk about expanding that statute government wide.
Yes. And I think that anyone who is a senior executive in government should be at least looking at the VA law and seeing how it affects VA senior executives, because it could be a precedent. Now, having said that, there are a lot of problems with that law and the way the current system is in terms of due process. And, you know, when you notify people that you intend to fire them and the rights that they have in that legal process to appeal and defend themselves, the intent behind the VA law was to, quote, make it easier
to fire them.
You know, the notification process is a real sticky issue. The VA decided they were going to give people a 5-day notice when they told them, okay, hey, you're fired. Here's your 5 days to sort of come up with a defense, and then we move forward from there. That was sort of their way to kind of protect themselves from what they know is the current law, but also sort of try to split the middle with the new law, which basically didn't have any sort of a notification clause in it. So the legal aspects of this are pretty thorny, and now you see some people who have been affected by this are, you know, using their due process and coming up to MSPB, which is the board which adjudicates these types of issues. And so how MSPB comes down on some of these will sort of determine where we go forward in terms of how this plays out, and whether or not, you know, the law needs to be tweaked, or it becomes, you know, something that other legislators look at to apply more broadly. It's a very complicated thing because, you know, the government was set up on a system of due process. It's not like the private sector for a reason. And, you know, to sort of tinker with that very longstanding principle, that very longstanding law, is not a quick fix.
Well, and I want to jump in. You're talking about the Merit Systems Protection Board. This is basically taking away a power. True, it's only over the senior executive service, but a power that the MSPB used to have in terms of the appeal rights. And Deborah, you're the lawyer in this expertise, but you know better than I. I have the sense from that and from the Conyers decision earlier that what we're seeing is a small shrinking of the MSPB's actual authority and therefore of the checks and balances on the merit system in the federal government.
Right. And it's intentional because Representative Miller and maybe some of his colleagues, you know, elected officials, they don't, you know, they're bold about it. They don't believe in a merit system. They'll tell you they do, but they say we should be able to make everybody at will fire for any reason or no reason. And the no reason part is really the dangerous thing. And over at the Senior Executive Association and other federal employee associations and unions, the concern has been, because Kelly, you said it's important to have a system of federal workers where they get due process. Well, that's a belief that comes from a belief that you don't want the people who actually are engaged in delivery of services to its citizens partisan.
Right. Politicized.
Yeah.
Right.
Because a year ago, I was on Francis Rowe's show and I said, you know, you have to go back and remember Eastern Europe. It was a party system. So who got a job in the bureaucratic, in the civil service, it was all in China. They're all party positions. So who got a better apartment? Who got the bigger apartment? Who got a bigger food voucher? It's all about party affiliation. And that's the danger inherent in the system, which is why for decades, people can't remember and send their brains back that far. We believe that the delivery of services, the direct delivery to services to citizens, should not be partisan. But I do think we have to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about predictions for 2015, 2016. I do think that we're not done, Kelly, like you said. I don't think we're done. I don't think this new law is just going to be for senior executives at the VA. I think they've got a taste of it. They like it. They like firing federal employees really quickly. They think there's value there. To go to your point, Emily, it's not about the grander picture. It's the quick fix. So I think it's out there. We'll talk about it when we come back. We need to take our final commercial break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting today's show. It's our reporter roundup, end of the year discussion as we look back and look forward. In this segment, we're looking forward. And I'm going to survey all three of the reporters that I have with us today on their predictions for 2015. And I suspect that all of your predictions are rooted in the fact that we have both chambers of Congress in the same party. Kelly, let's start with you from GovExec.
I think that we will see, just as we have in the last few years coming out of the House in particular, more legislative efforts, whether they're standalone bills or measures embedded in larger bills, to reduce pay and benefits for federal workers. We saw that in particularly the budget resolution that Paul Ryan crafted along with his counterpart, Senator Murray, you know, the idea that federal workers need to contribute more to their pension. And the fact that there was an—I believe there was a measure in that resolution about attrition, not replacing certain workers with a replacement when they retire, and just sort of shrinking the federal workforce
overall.
Right, it was
1 in 3.
Right, 1 in 3. You know, nothing moved forward on that front in terms of law last year, and a lot of those provisions, a lot of the attacks on pay and benefits that happened, you know, sort of died in the House because the Senate was Democratic. And, you know, it just didn't go anywhere. Now, that could be different going into the next congressional session because you've got two chambers that are both Republican and you've got people on both sides who are interested, again, in sort of reducing the deficit, you know, making it look like they are cracking down on, in some people's terms, federal workers who get too good of a package and aren't doing their jobs. Now, we know that's not true. There are bad apples in every bunch in every workforce. But, you know, sometimes the narrative becomes it's everybody versus just a couple. And so I think that we're going to see more measures like that. You know, Jeff Miller, you mentioned him in the House. He's the head of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. He is interested in introducing a bill that allows the government to claw back some of the an employee's pension if they are found to be guilty of misconduct.
You think that he'll apply that to his own colleagues in the House and Senate? Because it's the same law. You know, he doesn't talk about that.
Know,
but the same law that applies to federal workers applies to him, and his colleagues actually went to jail.
Well, he has not introduced the bill yet, so it remains to be seen what it actually looks like legislatively, but that is his intention. So I think we are going to see, just broadly speaking, more attacks on taking away benefits and other pieces of compensation from federal workers, particularly if they have been, you know, judged to be found guilty of misconduct in some way, shape, or form.
Jason.
I'm really interested to see whether we continue to have more gridlock or not. I really am uncertain that the fact that we have both chambers under Republican control will actually change anything, because and to be frank, I think that if many of the federal employee specific bills had made it to the floor via an amendment or something like that in this past Congress, they probably would have passed even though there was Democratic control of the chamber. So I think that the dynamics, although they do change a little bit, in the end, I think it'll be most interesting to see if the Republican Party and their legislators up on Capitol Hill are interested in proving that they can govern and implement their vision for the country and the government, or whether there will continue to be just flat out fights between them and the administration. And they're continually trying to pull down the president and whoever the Democratic nominee may be for 2016.
Sure. They're going to start focusing on that by the end of the year.
Well, I too am very interested, very curious to see what happens in Congress with Republicans controlling both chambers. We are losing a lot of institutional memory. There are a number of chairmen of committees that really have impact over the federal workforce who are leaving. And of course, we know the Senate, they're all changing over. And even those who aren't leaving, Daryl Issa on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee is being replaced by Jason Chaffetz, who has promised to be perhaps less outwardly controversial, as Issa has been known to be. So it'll be very interesting to see how this new Congress acts upon things. Also, we know that the defense secretary is leaving. The attorney general is leaving. Those are two very high profile positions.
Big agencies.
Yeah.
So
those, while we haven't heard any specific criticism of the nominees, those do set us up for some pretty heated fights in the newly Republican led Senate.
And of course, there's a consequence if you don't have an agency head. I mean, that's the politics of it, Emily. But then it's what do you expect from the workforce? If you don't have an attorney general, if you don't have a SecDef, you know, a secretary of defense, you know, there's been these reports and studies. I know Jason and I have sort of touched on them over the year. And I think I did a radio show about that. The consequences to an agency when they lack a head. And, you know, it lacks inertia. Those are two really important places where you wouldn't want them lacking inertia.
No, of course not.
But I think they're going to gridlock them on it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, almost for, I would say, for Republicans, because they have such distaste for the current attorney general, it's almost worse for them if they do, because Eric Holder has said that he would stay on until his replacement gets there. But a final thing just about this dynamic that I think is going to be very interesting is to see if the president and the White House change at all, because they have been seen as being willing to compromise with Republicans, some on their left would say, too willingly, and have not really raised any alarm, say, with the deep cuts that we saw at the IRS's budget in the last appropriations bill that was
signed into law. Yeah, we heard Mike Causey on the intro to the show talk about that.
And we haven't heard the White House really complain. So the question is, you know, look at what's happening on Cuba. Is the president going to change his tone? Because basically he is in this, hey, I've got nothing to lose status now.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Jason, you mentioned at the very beginning of the show, the sequestration was upon us again. Mm-hmm. No one touched upon that in the 2015. Tell us about that. What do you mean it's upon us again?
So in fiscal year 2016, the budget cap for Defense Department is going to be set at $523 billion. The non-defense discretionary spending will be $492 billion. By 2021, if should sequestration be allowed to stay in effect, DOD will be capped at $590 billion and domestic agencies at $555 billion. Especially for the Defense Department, that adds up to almost over $350 billion of cuts that the agency is going to have to take. For domestic agencies, over $100 billion. So, you know, Congress continually is asking agencies to find to do more with less. And as we've heard from Mr. Koskinen from the IRS, he has said publicly, my agency will do less with less until Congress provides us with more. And it'll be interesting to see how other agencies address this coming down the pike.
I think that's a really good point you bring up, because you are going to see, I think, more pushback from some of the agencies. You know, the Air Force have said just this week, we're not doing any more layoffs next year. Enough is enough. We're going to, you know, offer people early retirement, some other sort of buyout. You know, we've cut basically to the bone at this point, and we're not doing any more layoffs, at least as far as, you know, 2015 is concerned. Now that may change, but I think you are going to see some people in agencies' heads say, look, we can't continue this mantra of we're going to do more with less. I mean, it's not possible. And, you know, as far as the Defense Department is concerned, something that is, I think, of concern to a lot of people is the fact that they're going to start really taking a hard look at compensation of active duty and retirees as far as pensions are concerned, as far as TRICARE costs are concerned.
I saw that.
And they haven't.
I saw that in the last week or two.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they have tried to push some more aggressive proposals the Defense Department and the administration has over the years, which Congress has pretty either rejected out of hand or sort of soften the blow a little bit, doing incremental change. I think it's going to be harder and harder, because it's a sacred cow for a lot of people. I think it's going to be harder and harder for Congress to sort of backpedal that going forward, especially with sequestration, when the Defense Department says, hey, you know, we got nothing left to cut. We got to cut some of these basic housing allowances. We've got to start looking at reducing the subsidies to military commissaries. So I think it's going to be harder for lawmakers to make the argument you can't touch that part of it.
And so in our last 20 seconds, 30 seconds, Jason, we're going to start hearing that. Is that your, because sequestration kicks in 16? We're going to start hearing all about that noise in 15?
I hope so. I think so. And I think we also have to look out for budget reconciliation. The incoming chairman of the House Budget Committee, Tom Price, has said that he's looking to do budget reconciliation, in which committees will be assigned a dollar value that they need to look to find to save. And for federal employees, the reason to look out for that is because the Oversight and Government Reform Committee only has monetary control over FEHB and your retirement account. So that might mean changes ahead for you there.
Okay. Well, that was really great. I didn't think we'd get through all that. I want to thank the three of you, Kelly Lunny, GovExec, Jason Breifel, Fed Manager, Fed Agent, Emily Kopp, Federal News Radio. Thank you all for being in our final reporter roundup show for 2014. And I want to wish our listeners the best in the new year.